Hi folks, Michael here, welcoming you once more into the Cartoon Saluniverse. You may remember that a few years back we did a mini-series on the wonderful films of the Irish animation studio Cartoon Saloon. And you know, every now and then we like to do follow-up episodes to check in on what the subjects of our mini-series are up to. This is something a little different though. I had the opportunity to curate and host a special event called The Short Films of Cartoon Saloon as part of the London Short Film Festival, which is running this month. And I saw that as a way of celebrating the 25th anniversary of the founding of Cartoon Saloon back in 1999. The programme took in 20 plus years of shorts, going all the way back to some of the very first works of the studio, including From Darkness, Nora Toomey's short film, right up until some of their most recent releases, including Screecher's Reach, the Star Wars Visions episode that we discussed on the podcast last year. Now, this short film event was held at the British Film Institute in their gorgeous NFT1 cinema, one of my favourite cinemas in the world, and the BFI actually built their own season to commemorate the 25th anniversary around this event with screenings of all of Cartoon Saloon's features as well. And if you're listening to this on the Friday that we're putting it out, there are still a couple of screenings in that season coming up this weekend. There's also the Puffin Rock movie and My Father's Dragon as well. But what made this so special was that we built this weekend where we had the shorts event and a couple of screenings as well as a sort of headline showcase weekend where we had members of Cartoon Saloon coming over to take part in the events. We had Tom Moore, Nora Toomey and Paul Young flying over to London, and it was great to watch this short films programme and then talk to them about it afterwards. And that's the recording I'm going to share with you now. But before I do, let's just run through the actual films that are in this programme. We talked about one or two of them, I think, in the mailbag wrap-up episode of the Cartoon Saluniverse miniseries. But just so we're all on the same page, we have From Darkness, we have Coolin Dulac, which is Backwards Boy from 2004. Those two were made before Cartoon Saloon had even released their first feature, Secret of Kells. And in fact, on From Darkness, as you'll hear on the recording, the studio is credited as The Cartoon Saloon. We then have later films like Adrien Mérigeau's Old Fangs, Julien Reynard's Somewhere Down the Line, also The Ledge End of Phil from Accounting, and then taking us right up to date, we have 2017's Oscar-nominated short Late Afternoon, directed by Louise Bagnell. We talked about that on the miniseries for sure. One of my favourite short films and one of my favourite Cartoon Saloon works, full stop, I think, that one. And seeing it on the big screen, gosh, what a heartbreaker it was. We then go to 2020's Greenpeace campaign film There's a Monster in My Kitchen, which was Tom Moore and Fabian Erlinghauser's short and actually shared a lot of the crew with Wolfwalkers, the feature film, and right up to Screecher's Reach by Paul Young, which won a special Emmy for production design and is currently up for a couple of Annie Awards as well. Seeing that on the big screen, actually seeing all of these on the big screen, was such an incredible experience. You really do see the artistry, but also the diversity of talents behind the scenes at Cartoon Saloon. You may think that you know what the studio is all about based on their features, but watching these shorts just shows a great array of styles, tones, moods, everything there, as well as other filmmakers for you to look up and enjoy and follow through their careers from the short film side of the fence. It really was a fantastic event, and I was so grateful to everybody involved in putting it on, as well as everyone that turned up. We had 400 people there in the NFT1 watching these short films in the company of Cartoon Saloon's founders, and then we heard them speak about it, and that is the recording that I can share with you now. So that's enough from me, and let's hand over to me speaking with Tom, Nora and Paul.
I suppose, first of all, what was it like for you three watching that 20 years of cinema collapsed into one?
Thank you an awful lot. Thank you so much. Yeah. I don't think we've ever watched all those films all together in one place. I just kept tearing up because also I'm forgetting the films and I'm getting the same reaction. But also there's lots of stuff that's associated over 25 years with making those films. It's all flooding back. Like, you know,
I'm just
the memories
getting to see it with an audience as well.
Yeah, lovely to see. We rarely get to see those films with an audience. So thanks all for coming.
Thanks for organising it.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here.
What I noticed is, as the production values kind of improved, or we kind of hit our stride, it was more and more for smaller screens. Yeah. And it's get to see, the Star Wars and the Monster in My Kitchen were on a big screen here, and they were some of our most recent work, mm-hmm. and I was really happy to see that.
Absolute knockout on the big screen, all of yeah. these really, having a chance to watch them, because I suppose now we are watching them on YouTube or some sort of player on a screen, laptop.
Yeah, the Greenpeace short was for distribution on the internet as much as possible.
So one thing I noticed watching this, and this is a bit of a cheeky question perhaps, on From Darkness you're credited as the Cartoon Salute. Yeah. So was there a point where a Justin Timberlake type came up to you and said, drop the, yeah, it's cleaner? Yeah.
I think it was Justin actually.
Get called Cartoon Salon all the time anyway, so it doesn't matter. Just the cartoon Irish place is good enough for us.
Yeah. Take us all the way back to the beginning then, because I suppose you founded the studio in 1999. From Darkness is 2002. Are you working on it 2001? Were shorts always on the agenda when you started the studio, or was that something you had to do, or how did that happen?
I think The Secret of Cows was originally a short, right?
Yeah, and then it grew and became, we thought it would be a TV special, and then we realised it was even bigger, it was going to be a feature. So Nora, we all would apply for this frameworks mm-hmm. scheme with the Irish Film Board in the early days, because when we were in college we would have seen even some of our teachers might have applied. You know, it was sort of a, it wasn't a big budget, but it was a budget to make a short film. And so I remember that year we realised Secret of Cows was going to be a while coming. We'd made a trailer, kind of, and a few of us had applied for a frameworks, and Nora got it. And it was the first real production of our own production.
Yeah,
it wasn't work
to
for hire or commercial.
35mm
But it had been, you had the idea in college, right? Hmm? You'd had that idea already in college.
I had been sketching. I came across the story of the skeleton woman in a book called Women Who Run With Wolves, and I just loved the idea of running away from the thing that frightens you and then having to turn around and then it transforms. I guess I had a lot of nightmares like that. I still do, probably. But so I just loved that concept. So I started drawing with ink and watercolour quite a bit in sketchbooks, and I think it was art directed by my then partner, now husband, Michael, who it's funny actually, because you see, you know, people's names pop up through them for somewhere down the line, Julien Renard's film. Myself and Michael got to have a huge argument, the couple driving at the beginning of the film. And I remember the editor, Dara, was recording it, and I thought he was really angry with us, but he was really upset at myself and Michael arguing. So we were having a great time, and it's just funny just seeing people in different roles, I guess, through the films, coming in at different ways of supporting them.
Well, even on From Darkness, it's Jeremy and Lorraine who just directed the Puffin Rock feature that we are showing here as well. So there are names who are cropping up throughout the whole history. But what was the, how was the studio sort of put together and run at the time? Were you all mucking in? Because Paul, you even have credits on that first one. Hands-on credits, sound.
Yeah, I did sound. Yeah, we did the sound. Remember, in a bathtub. You know, you can make the sound of snow by twisting a leather glove. Foot first in the stuff. We discovered that too. Me and Martin and the sound. But it was very we didn't know how to raise money for things, or didn't know really how you got the money. And it was our current managing director, when me and Tom very early days went up and looking for advice, he had a studio in Dublin, he says, just go out to all the festivals and show up. And so it was very much friends from college, about 15 of us, going down to Tom's hometown, where young Irish filmmakers were. There was this brilliant place for kids. My daughter's in it now, Robin. We're kids, just like a sort of youth club.
I kind
really.
Of grew up in there, yeah. It was kind of the place where if you weren't good, hurling is an Irish sport that's incredibly popular in Kilkenny, and I went to the school that produced all the best hurlers. So myself and Ross Stewart, who co-directed Wolfwalkers, and you would have seen him in some of those, were the kind of not hurlers. And so we found young Irish filmmakers, which had the double benefit. You could learn about how to make films, you could muck around with equipment, and there was girls as well, not just boys.
And
I
was so jealous of this when the lads told me about, because I would come from Boyle, even smaller, and yeah, it was like video game, the shop with the two video games and football, which my dad coached. That. So the idea of being able to, which gave, I think, a brilliant start for Tom and Ross, and Tom and sort of inspired us. Oh, we can make things. You know, I think that was the great lesson. It was a real you can make stuff.
Empowering time. It was the 90s. And equipment, like now you can make a film with your phone, but back then equipment was kind of hard to get your hands on. Myself and Ross had tried to make a cartoon, and we had all the cells painted, and we had the backgrounds, and we had no way to shoot it. So we joined Young Irish Filmmakers trying to get the Bolex camera, you know. And then it was very, like, Amiga, very early software, but still, it was very empowering. And, you know, even just making Lego men move and stuff was really empowering. And it just felt like a place where you could have a go, and that it wasn't something that was kind of behind a wall, like it was something very tactile that you could do. And I learned there, I think, that like you can do something better in a group than on your own, because I'd been a classic kind of nerd making comics in my bedroom, and then there was a little gang of us in Young Irish Filmmakers that were into animation and art, and working together we could do something better. And that was sort of where I got the spirit of animation, because animation is such a collaborative medium. I realised that this is better than just trying to do it all on my own, you know.
And the board of Young Irish Filmmakers managed to get a grant for us and, you know, set aside a room for us so we could make all our mistakes, and we weren't in a big, you know, high overhead, you know, place where we had to, you know, do a lot of commercials or anything like that. We were able to kind of spend the time just exploring, making lots of mistakes, you know, and finding out how to do things and how to work even as a team. Because when you go through, you know, Jeremy and Lorraine and Fabi and all of these people had gone to college with us, but we hadn't really figured out how to work in a team, you know, and how to get something done for a deadline. Like Screen Ireland, the film board were incredible for us, just making us stick to deadlines, you know, because, you know, films are never finished, someone takes them off you, you know, so having to get ready for the Galway film Fla or something like that, you know, it was a huge discipline for us, and it was an incredible experience. And the skills that we learned making the shorts all the way through, we applied to the kind of larger projects, you know.
I think the main thing was that we'd all studied in Ballyfermot College to be animators at most, maybe in-betweeners. You know, it was sort of an antiquated course, because things were changing in the 90s with Toy Story and all. And so Filmmakers was an opportunity for us to kind of continue that college experience and keep playing with hand-drawn animation and keep on experimenting and stuff. But the shorts, I suppose, that we just watched were also a continuation of that. When the studio was a little... As the studio grew, it continued to be a place where some of the young talent to get a chance to make their own films. And there's, like, you see an array of filmmakers. They were all people that kind of came out of the crew from the different projects and had an idea and got it made.
I'd love to ask about that in a second, but before we leave From Darkness, so did that play at Galway? Was that your first experience of showing a Cartoon Saloon piece of work to an audience?
And then shortly after that at Annecy, which was incredible. Yeah. This was a huge huge audience, and I suppose it was the first time it really hit me that it's, you know, it's no longer whatever piece of work you do, it's no longer yours, it belongs to the audience, you know, and how they connect with the characters. And it also was the first time I realised that you can't stand up and go, the reason that scene isn't that well animated is because we ran out of time and somebody was sick and we had to get somebody else to animate, and it just is what it is, you know, at that point. So I suppose I've always it changed how I suppose direct even, or and how I, you know, encourage other directors to just really, you know, if something is really important to you in your gut and in your heart, just go for that and just hold on to that feeling rather than the compromises. Obviously all filmmaking, as well as, you know, being taken off you, it's also a bunch of compromises, but the ones that hit you here are the ones that you can't let go of, you know. So that's something I learned from that.
And then the watching them side by side, you feel the shifts in styles between the films. So between From Darkness and then Culain Dulac, Backwards Boy, so different. At that point, were you looking at shorts as a way of trying different things, or is that just how it felt?
Absolutely. Actually, we should probably get the 35. I just realised because they're off of JPEGs, that's why they're all so faded. The first couple of films, we were trying things. Yeah, that whole photo montage style, I think, something that you were interested in, Tom, with Ross. Stuart, at the time, From Darkness was Michael art directed it. So yeah, we were absolutely trying different things. But even now, we continue, you know, it's Creatures Reach, and we're working on a short at the moment that, you know, we're looking at them and going, okay, well, if we try this technique, you know, what impact does that have on production? You know, and okay, can we do that on a bigger scale? So they're just fantastic training grounds.
It's such an amazing array of styles throughout the film. So as we move into, you know, those first couple are from 2001, 2002, 2004, into the period where maybe it's after Song of the Sea and the studio is a bit more formalised, and it is, as you say, an opportunity for younger filmmakers to have their stab at directing a short. How do some of these projects come about when it is some of these more junior or younger filmmakers?
Well, for example, with Somewhere Down the Line, with Julien Renard, he had worked on...
Storyboarded and backgrounds on Song of the Sea.
Mm. Yeah.
So he really stood out as being like really talented young voice that we wanted to support. And a lot of them kind of were in between projects, like Old Fangs, Adrian Mirjo, at the time Maya Mirjo now, was one of the background supervisors on Secret of Kells and had that idea. And like we were between Secret of Kells and Song of the Sea when we made that, you know, so it was an opportunity with a skeleton crew in between the features to, you know, to, like as Nora said, experiment and try stuff out, you know.
And then the frameworks itself is a once a year thing. Now, it doesn't give you all the money you're going to need, but you know, it gives you some money. And then we have equipment in the studio, so it's like we're quite strict with the filmmakers as well. Like, look, this is the money you have, really try to make for that money, because it's, we don't have any more. And then use all the equipment, and then we do kind of invest in it too. And then when you try to get it distributed, you're trying to put some of your money in there to make sure it gets seen and gets out there. Yeah, which worked really well for Late Afternoon, actually, and on all of them, really. Yeah.
So I remember when Louise was graduating from college, I had she was part of a little group that I saw kind of kinship with us when we graduated in Ballyfermot, and some of them, including her partner Ciarán, came to the studio for Song of the Sea. So we kind of coaxed her down to the studio because we had an eye on her as a director, and now she's directing a feature with us after she did the short. So it's a good example of like people come and Adrian came in as an intern and became a background supervisor and then directed and then was art director on Song of the Sea. So it's kind of part of the ramp, you know, people come in and they train on the productions and then they get a chance to maybe to do a short and then who knows what more, you know.
Yeah, so watching them all on the big screen, they're all so amazing and striking, but with the world of shorts, often they are just shown at festivals, they're enjoyed by people in the industry. Sometimes they do break through if there is an Oscar nomination in play, and that's something that happened with Late Afternoon. So what was the different about that one in terms of the journey it went on?
I think it was, we had lots of experience at this stage with that kind of like trying to get things out, and we actually I think a good difference, must say, is we were becoming better known by the people, like the people that are in those kind of academies and stuff. We're getting better known, so it's a bit easier to signal boost out of so many brilliant shorts that happen. Mm-hmm. And you have to be hit in certain festivals, you have to kind of be selected in certain festivals. And then we actually got to know some people like publicists over in LA. So that actually does help. So people who know and they help get the word out. And then you have to make a good film.
Come here. They're all good, right? Because I remember From Darkness, we got a fax. That's how long ago it was.
Yeah.
And it was left in the machine over lifted. Christmas or something. Yeah. I remember it was on the short list.
VHS tapes, so we copied them by hand. We couldn't even send them to.
But we got a fax in. It was on the short list for the Oscars. Yes. We didn't get nominated, but it got there. And then it was kind of like this mystery. How did you even get that close to the Academy? So by the time Late Afternoon was out, we had much more knowledge of how to get it in front of the right people. But I think it's a particularly beautiful film.
Yeah.
And even figuring out what festival you should apply for, because if you know in a particular region or country that, you know, because you might cancel out like a bigger festival or something like that if you've already screened the film. And of course the digital availability just changed it utterly. I remember actually on From Darkness trying to coordinate, if I send the print to this festival, they can send it directly to the next festival without me having to send it because I can't afford to, and you know, trying to all the logistics of that. And then so
same with Secret of Kells. There was 35 prints of Secret of Kells in the world, and they were being shipped around.
Friends would ship, I was able to, when we were doing the Star Wars short, and finally met Kathleen Kennedy. She was one of those people who, when we were in LA trying to get Secret of Kells shown to people, she was a friend of the distributor from doing Persepolis. She co-executive produced Persepolis. So I was getting an email from Kathleen Kenny. Says, look, I have your 35mm. Steven, as in Steven Spielberg, would like to see it. Can I send it to him? I said, sure, yeah, whatever. And then she emailed me back. He likes to keep it for another weekend because he wants to show the kids and a few grandkids. Oh, grand, yeah. So I was like literally sitting in the hotel in LA tracking the 35mm
the concept
princess.
That he could play 35mm
in his house. In his house. Yeah, he was showing it in his house to friends. So that was good. Friends in High Places, also very good. But like these are, you know, random things. But I think the community over there as well, the animation community in general, is really hospitable and really welcoming. So we've always been treated really well. Because when we first went over there, we were greeted at the airport by a beautiful Jamie, who took us around the place, who unfortunately has passed away.
She was an animation artist who was like a super fan, who ended up becoming like first unofficial and then officially our publicist in LA, because she would literally hand out DVDs to friends who were Academy members and stuff. She was just such a fan. So people like that on the ground. She'd worked on The Illusionist, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's that. And then actually with Late Afternoon, it actually is still... Jerry, who, like, we worked with a distributor, and shorts actually don't do so bad now. There was a period when Secret of Cows, when cinema was dying, and then people were pirating everything, and that really kind of killed us with Secret of Cows. We didn't get any revenue from DVDs because it was just when sort of the system was a bit broken, and the only way to see a film was to actually download it illegally. And now that's sort of caught up with streaming, people are able to pay for films digitally. And now Late Afternoon has a good run on airlines, and it's still been paid for by people, which is great. We still get checks in because people have bought.
Now there's a market for shorts again online, which is amazing, because there was this kind of wilderness period when we were making shorts, as you say, really just for festivals. But I remember Old Fangs was the first one that suddenly was getting loads of hits, and went to Sundance, and people were able to watch it on YouTube, and being able to read everyone's comments underneath. It was really exciting.
Like. Yeah, gosh, Late Afternoon on a plane. I mean, if here it's making me sob uncontrollably at high altitude, I can't imagine.
Yeah, you always cry more on a plane. I remember seeing this film, A Monster Calls. Did you ever see that?
Yeah.
Gee, I was a mess, and everyone was handing me tissues and all that. I was like, this is a really sad film, but I think it was also the fact that it was up high.
Yeah. So you mentioned Kathy Kennedy, Paul. We should talk about Screech's Reach. First of all, how incredible it looks, and you know, we should shout out Almu Redondo, who got an Emmy for the production design, art direction, which, you know, watching at home, I was like, come on, some of these massive shots need to be seen up here. So we're very privileged to see it. So you had been hands-on to begin with, but then had gone the producer path.
Yes. When we started, I was the ones sort of, this is the story I tell, it sounds. But I was the one sitting beside the phone and the one computer, so I was answering, so I became the producer. That's what it was. But I kind of enjoyed the going out and travelling while, you know, and me and Tom travelled a little bit at first, and then I continued and just tried to, how the hell do you get the money?
His nickname in the early years was Paul Hollywood Young, because we were all sitting freezing in Young Irish Filmmakers while Paulie was off.
Pictures of me over there.
Yeah, taking pictures with like Pamela Anderson
work.
On the
I'm
beach.
I'm constantly trying to justify these trips. It is work. I'm trying to meet people. So, Jesus, he's swanning around all the world. But always thinking at some point I'll try to do more back into it again, and thankfully Nora and Tom, I'm eternally grateful for them, are encouraging me look, Paul, now maybe you should think about directing and to focus, and we're doing a sort of thing where we are trying to refocus ourselves into what we'd like to do and create. So I was, and just as I was trying to come up with something sci-fi, I says, oh, wouldn't it be what would it be like if Carton Sloan did a science fiction? Because I'm big into science fiction. And just around that time, a producer, Jackie Lopez from Lucasfilm, rang up and says, would you like to do a Star Wars short, basically offering it? So, yeah, this is a great opportunity for me then. I says, yeah, I'll do that. I didn't even tell the lads I'll do it, right? No, I did. But it was a good opportunity for me to cut my teeth in a way as a director. And then it was an amazing crew that I had.
Both Monster in My Kitchen and Screecher's Reach kind of inherited a well-oiled team of people from Wolfwalkers, and you can kind of see it. I think you can kind of feel that they're related a bit. I feel it anyway.
Yeah,
animators like Rohit Kelkar as well on Screecher's Reach. Yeah. Just really, there's just some amazing, really fantastic 2D animators out there.
Yeah, and I was big into. I've got some friends from Belfast here, Art College, University of Ulster. Where I was mad about Ralph Steadman as a kid. So I wanted to go back to very much trying to do something very inky, and the line looking very like a brush and inky. So basically that was kind of part of that, was like, let's make it look very like expressionistic ink and marks and paper. So yeah, it was great. It was one of the best years of my life. I just loved it. I just loved the whole experience and mad to do more.
And Tom, on There's a Monster in My Kitchen, first of all, what's it like going from making feature films to then, like, under 2 minutes to tell your story? But also, I suppose, you're taking something that's subtext in many of the features and making it text, which is the environmental theme.
Yeah. It was right at the end of Wolfwalkers, which was in the middle of lockdown. So it seemed a bit intimidating, and I was pretty tired. I remember Nora encouraging me to go for it, because it was when Greenpeace approached it, and I saw the subject matter was, so I've been vegan for 15 years, and vegetarian for a long time before that, and they said the McCartneys were behind it, Stella and Paul had been one of the inspirations for me to be a vegetarian, so everything was aligning with what I cared about, but I was totally pooped. But it was great, because the team, everyone, working from home, which was crazy, you know, and I was already on sabbatical in Paris. I was studying life drawing, you know, so part of it I was storyboarding, like, from Paris, but it didn't matter because, you know, it was the lockdown, everyone was used to working from home and everything like that. So
Fabian Erlinghausen,
yeah,
as well,
massively helped, like, because Fabian hadn't been able to be, he'd been only done a little bit on Wolfwalkers, he'd been busy on another project, his own TV series, I think. He was delighted, and I was delighted to work with him, you know, it was really nice. So when I came back then, when we were kind of, when we'd wrapped it, we had one, like, round table that we did to kind of promote it, and it was the time that we were all sitting together again. We hadn't seen each other because we'd all been kind of siloed during the lockdown, but everyone was so used to working together on Wolfwalkers, it was a bit like a victory lap. Mm. And for me it was kind of personal because I got my little nephews from Peru, and I based a little boy in it on him, on Salvador, and the mam on my sister, and so that was kind of nice as well.
That's very sweet. Okay, folks in the audience, moment of truth, any hands up for some questions? Someone right in the second row here, just down there. But actually, there's someone there right next to you if you want to go there first, and they will come down here afterwards.
Hi, guys. I've got a very nerdy question. So I'm a big fan of the Moho software that I'm sure you guys are aware of. Like, I know you guys work with Victor Paredes a lot. I've seen Jeremy Purcell's webinars on the tools. What I find really interesting is that a lot of studios are sort of anxious about adopting new technology and new workflows, which is something that you guys have done recently. You know, I know you use a lot on Screech's Reach and obviously like Puff and Rock and stuff. So as a studio, how are you guys adjusting to updating your workflow to adopt these tools?
Well, actually, yeah, so we do a little bit of a hodgepodge. We're always looking for... I remember Secret of Kells was on paper...
But
and then
we had the precursor to Moho, which was called Anime Studio Pro,
yes,
which Jeremy, who was the effects supervisor, used. And I remember being really impressed because it was Ross's paintings, literally his paintings, could move. Mm. And that was it. You know, we wanted to get a hand-painted, hand-drawn on screen, but we couldn't have done it. Like, we would have taken 15 years to, you know. So we had to use some little workarounds, and then that just kind of grew and grew. And by the time we were doing the Puff and Rock series, Jeremy kind of did a little test. I wanted to do it like frame by frame, hand drawn, but for a series that would be crazy. And Jeremy did a little test with Lily Bernard's designs, and they had all the textures and everything of like a pop-up book, but he could move it. So it was like a beautiful synergy of still looking handmade, and it was handmade, but then using the technology to get it on screen. So I think that was the appeal of Moho. It was that was a way to get paintings moving without having to go into, you know, 3D and things like that. It was just,
I used it a lot on My Father's Dragon as well, with the whole island shaking, and working as close as possible with Victor, I think, and him working with the art director and with the background team and the animation team, because he's an artist kind of first and foremost, worked really well, as with Jeremy. I mean, they just understand, you know, how much is too much and how, you know, because we really want to keep the kind of aesthetic beauty and the hand-drawn nature of what we do. So when we use it, we're quite focused about where we use it and how we use it.
We try to figure out what something's going to look like first and then see what's going to suit best. And we're actually probably going to do testing on another bit of software soon as well.
We're in the batch. No, I like on Wolfwalkers, we wanted to really celebrate hand-drawn. I think you can see in all the shorts, there's a scratchiness even to the earliest stuff. There's collage. It's real artsy, craftsy stuff that we wanted to keep going rather than looking shiny and perfect, you know. And I think more and more as AI and stuff comes in, I think more and more that we're in the right direction, leaning into handmade. But it doesn't mean we can't use technology cleverly to help us get stuff made and put the artist's hands on screen, you know. So that's what I think is most important. Like, and going back to Kells, yeah, it was all drawn on paper and scanned and coloured. And then by Wolfwalkers, nearly everything was drawn directly with Cintiqs, except for the Wolf Vision, which was... Ross and I wanted to show the world how it would look if you were a wolf, you know. And there was videos online of people trying to figure it out, and they don't see colour the same as us, but scent is very important to them. And we did concepts, and it was all charcoal-y, you know, like just charcoal-y and then just colour for the scents. Then we worked with a guy called Evan McNamara, talented director, that, like from Louise's generation. He had his own studio, Paper Panther, at the time up in Dublin, and he came down and we kind of iterated a process where we would build the forest or the town or whatever in Blender and move the camera with a VR headset on, you know. And then Ross and I could literally plan out, we were like pretending to be wolves and stuff, and it was very rough, very very rough CG. It didn't have any details or anything. And then Evan would draw over that with grease pencil, a little bit more detail. And then we'd print every frame, and we'd a team of 9 people who spent the entire 3 years of the production doing just that 5 minutes. But it was worth it, because on screen then it's charcoal and pencil. Every frame is on paper, and you can feel it. But how we got to that was using really like the latest technology. So that's kind of...
Just to point out as well, on Kells, it was mostly paper, but we also used Flash, Macromedia Flash,
true,
which became Adobe.
And little background guides. Yeah.
Yeah, and also some 3D as well. So again, we just, you know, we used the budget and the people that we had the best way we could to, you know, put the art direction on the screen, whatever way we could. We weren't...
It's funny how the story goes, though, because there's a kind of a... Like, we've managed to attract a lot of classical hand-drawn animators that want to keep going with that art form. And then on the other hand, we're doing all this kind of technological innovation, and it kind of goes back and forwards all the time, because, like I say, we're always just trying to get the artist's hand on screen, you know. But I was recently interviewed and someone said, and so you made Screecher's Reach entirely in Moho. I was like, no, it's like a mixture of hand-drawn, there's the banshee,
there's actually
ink on paper.
That's all paper. With the banshees.
But the vehicles are Moho, so it's a real blend, you know.
Yeah, so think, like, for people in the audience who don't understand the difference, like, there's hand-drawn animation which you draw, and on frame by frame where you draw your hand, and then there's certain softwares which are almost like CGI, which you can rig, like textures or rig things that can be manipulated then digitally.
Yeah. More like cut-out animation.
Yeah, more like cut-out animation. So that's sort of the difference. So, like, vehicles like that, they're Moho. They're built kind of... It's not exactly CGI, but it's like shapes that can be moved in the computer, and then hand-drawn characters on top. So the characters are still TV paint, hand-drawn, and yeah.
But let's say at the heart of it all is the language of painting and drawing. And I think we felt that if we stuck with that, we could do something timeless. Because if everything just looked like the latest shiny technology, it ages really quickly. When I look at the first Toy Story from 1995, it looks quite ropey now. Mm. Even though at the time I thought it looks uber realistic, because the CG kept on progressing. But if you look at Bambi, or you look at Totoro, or you look at Ponyo or the Boy and the Heron, they all kind of have the same visual language, because there's a hand-drawn aesthetic. And even though the latest stuff is mixing in a bit of computer technology, it's the language of painting and drawing that keeps it timeless, I think.
Mm, absolutely. I think we're down to, was it the person with the glasses on their head? sorry. That's where they are.
That's where they are. Thank you. What was my question? I guess this might end up being actually relevant to what you were just talking about. I mean, basically I was wondering how long does it take to make a short animation? Like, is it proportional to making a feature length? And, you know, I feel like one of the things I notice is that, you know, you're talking about, like, your sort of style, and these things all were very coherent, but also maybe the styles were more different than I maybe expected, having only seen, like, a couple of the features that you've done. What am I asking? Yeah, and, yeah, short making, how long does it take? And then I guess if you're just talking about, like, all those different technologies that you use, like, when you make a short, can you try out different things? Because does it take less time? How do you decide what you spend your time on, shorts or features?
How long's a short? How long's a piece of string?
It depends. If you're working on your own and you're doing it in the evenings after you come home from your day job, it might take you 20 years. You know, if you've got a team of 10 people who you can spend a 9-to-5 on it 5 days a week, it can take you about a year to do that. Shorts always, to me, they seem so easy because by comparison, just because you can fix, like if something goes wrong, you can actually fix it. You can, you know, you can. Whereas with a feature, it's just they're just such huge juggernauts by comparison. So shorts can be very free, depending on how much experience you have as well, you know. And then experience isn't, you know, sometimes what you might have to say with your first piece of work, even though it might be rough around the edges, might be, you know, might be more impactful than something that, you know, maybe later in your career or whatever. So, but it, yeah, if you have about 10 people who are, you know what they're doing, it can take about a year, or one person 20 years. there was a second part.
Does technology make it go quicker, some of this technology?
Well, that's what you want. I mean, if it's going to make it go slower, then you just don't use it. But, you know, but that is it. Actually, it's a really good question. Like, for example, on the short that we're doing at the moment, we had planned to make it one way, or to do parts of it one way, and then somebody said, hang on, we've got two people here that, you know, we're going to have very little work for if we don't use them this. We don't have a person for using it that other way, so it makes more sense. So the agility in shorts work is fantastic as well, because you're literally talking about two people as opposed to an entire department of 20 people in a co-production studio where you don't share the first language maybe, or whatever.
It's an interesting example, though, and the current short is not released yet, that actually something that was planned to be done with some fiddly CG or computer technologies ended up being faster just to do it by hand. So it's always just what's the best way to get it done. And it is a good way to try out stuff for the features, because I'm watching what's happening on Screecher's Reach and then on the new short we're making. And for the next feature I do, I'd like to borrow some of the techniques. And, you know, you discover a lot on the short, you know.
I'm just looking across to Josh, the producer. Should we wrap up, Josh? Sorry, we've got to get out because there's more films on this afternoon. But before we go, you've mentioned this short. So is this something on the horizon further away that we can be excited about?
Yeah. We're in the middle of making a short with Giovanna Ferrari, who was part of the animation team on Song of the Sea, head of story and the breadwinner, head of story and animation director on My Father's Dragon. She's making her own short now called Eru, and we're about halfway through. It's kind of a celebration of the goddess Bridget, who's a big thing in Ireland, and so she's just having a great time, and the team are having a lovely time, and it looks really, really beautiful. So, yeah.
And then for anyone who's maybe seen Late Afternoon for the first time today and wonders what's going to happen next, Louise has a project on the horizon as well. We can talk about that now, can't we?
Yes, absolutely.
Based on the book Julian is a Mermaid.
Mm-hmm. Which I read to my son when he was tiny, wait to see that.
It's a lovely book.
Yeah, so there's more to come, can't wait. And there's more to come this weekend as well. We've got the screening of The Breadwinner this afternoon, as well as Wolfwalkers, and another panel with the three of you on Sunday afternoon as well to have more chats. But for now, everyone, please say thank you to Paul, Tom and Nora for joining us today. Thank you for coming along as well. Thank you, everyone.
So that was me talking with Nora Toomey, Tom Moore and Paul Young at the BFI for our special Cartoon Saloon short films programme that we held as part of the London Short Film Festival and also the Cartoon Saloon at 25 season at the BFI. As I said, both the LSFF and the Cartoon Saloon at 25 season are both running until the end of January. So if you're listening to this and there are still a couple of days left, have a look at their various websites to see what's happening. I just want to say thanks to Charlotte at the London Short Film Festival for getting in touch with me and saying, let's put on a shorts programme of animation. And I said, what about these Cartoon Saloon shorts? That was really fun to get the ball rolling. Also, thank you to Susan and the team at Cartoon Saloon. We've spoken to so many members of the Cartoon Saloon family over the years and we've covered all their films, so it was really great to bring all that together for a really special event at the BFI. Which reminds me to thank Justin, the programmer, Josh, who produced the event, and to Richard on the press team, who sent over the file for the recording. If this has whetted your appetite to hear more about the films of Cartoon Saloon, please go back through the archive and check out our Cartoon Saloon-iverse miniseries. We have special episodes about all of their features, from The Secret of Kells all the way up to the Puffin Rock movie that came out last year. We also have in-depth interviews with many of the members of the team, including Tom Moore and Ross Stewart talking about Wolfwalkers. We have Nora Toomey speaking about My Father's Dragon, and then Paul Young talking about Screecher's Reach. And then from below the line, we also have Will Collins, who co-wrote a couple of the features, like Song of the Sea, but also co-wrote Screecher's Reach most recently. So go back to the archive, we have all sorts of episodes about Cartoon Saloon. And if you want to see any of the shorts, many of these are on YouTube or on various streaming services. Screechers Reach is on Disney Plus, so you have to have a subscription for that. But pretty much all the other ones are on Cartoon Saloon's YouTube channel, and I really would recommend you watch them if you can, because they really do tell the full story of the studio and show off their talents that maybe you don't always see in their features. Thank you for listening, folks. We should be back with a more traditional episode with me, Jake and Steph talking about animation very shortly. If you want to keep up with what we do, we're over on Twitter/X at Ghibliotech. We're on Instagram as well, ghibliotech.pod. See you next time.